Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Staff and Graph Podcast.
This is weird. My lock's been drilled, so I open the door and my steering wheel is missing.
And links are salad.
You know what? You're trying very hard not to get sued.
You can have all the talent in the world skating around, but if you don't have a goaltender, it does not matter.
Team Tidy Business, baby.
Well, Rachel, here we are. We're embroiled in a, and this is stepping on our deep dive, we're embroiled in a crazy race for the final Eastern Conference wild card spot. You know, we have Austin Matthews. He's passing 60 goals. He's almost going to hit 70. Potentially we can, we have great plays, clutch moments. So naturally we're going to start the show with the Arizona Coyotes and their pursuit to purchase was lovingly referred to on a local Channel 12 in Arizona broadcast that I watched in preparation for this as dirt.
They're awesome.
Literally, it was so funny that I was watching, like, in to prep this episode, I was watching a clip from Channel 12 Arizona News, like NBC News, local in Arizona, and they were like, the Arizona Coyotes are looking to build an arena, but it might be it cost a pretty penny. They're, you know, like city, state appraisers have appraised this land at $68.5 million for dirt. And it's true because it's literally a stretch of like remote desert. So that's happening. I really didn't want to talk about it when it was announced because it's a land auction deal. Like auction is going to come out in like June, and then they're going to basically the future of the Coyotes rests on whether or not they win that auction. The starting bid is $68.5 million, which funnily enough is almost three times as high as what the Coyotes applied to buy that land for a year ago.
So they tried to undercut it by 66%.
Nice. Like because it hadn't been appraised by the city. They just came and they were like, hey, can we buy this for like $23 million or whatever? And they're like, no. We're actually going to appraise it, and the starting bid, because keep in mind, this is going to go for more than $68.5 million. This is the starting bid.
Yeah.
It also comes out to, again, the starting bid, over 700 grand per square foot. That's crazy. That is crazy.
Okay. So, and wow, I'm going to give away my background a little bit here, but 700 grand per square foot for undeveloped land where it is developable is actually pretty cheap.
No, but this is desert.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't matter. Regardless, if you are able to develop on it, the value that the land will have to developers far exceeds the fact that it's dirt / sand or whatever. So like, I'll give you an example. When you are trying to buy, so I live on the family farm right now. This is the last episode that's remote. We're going to be back in studio on Thursday. I'm very excited. If somebody came to my family and said, we want to buy your house because we want to live in the house, probably a couple million bucks or whatever. But if a developer comes and says, we want all 15 acres that you live on because we're buying up the other three or four properties on the street, and it's going to end up being like 1,000 acres of land or whatever. That all of a sudden, because they're developing it, the attributed value of the land skyrockets. So immediately it goes from like a maybe $2 or $3 million purchase to like, now we're talking like 20.
Yeah.
And so that's just how, I think a lot of people don't understand how the value of land works. And the second that you say you're going to develop it, which is what the Coyotes are going to do, it basically 5 to 10x the value of the land.
So what makes that different though? And I know this because of, you know, like where I work and whatnot, is there is no infrastructure near this. There is none. So 700 grand per square foot. Like that's, you know, that might be, first of all, that's USD. That's like $1 million a square foot. That's
almost
a lot.
It's like 925.
Yeah. That's a lot. Even if it's like based on where this is located and all that. But what makes it even worse is that there is no infrastructure. There is no, like there is a, like there is no frontage roads near it. They will have to build.
So you got to build the roads too.
They will have to build the roads. They will have to build the water and sewage pipelines. And let me tell you, that is not cheap. Plumbing, plumbing infrastructure is some of the most expensive construction you can possibly have. Which is why the whole reason why we're talking about this today is because the mayor of Scottsdale. Now, to be fair, the actual land that they're looking to buy, although it says it's in Scottsdale, it's just outside the city limits of Scottsdale.
So the mayor's opinion technically isn't relevant then.
The mayor is going to fight this. So the mayer's opinion is very relevant because the mayor is going
to
fight.
Well, no, if it's outside the city limits, then it's not his land to govern, right?
But there's a lot of things that a mayor can do to make a situation.
Oh, yes, but what I'm saying is he doesn't have final say.
He can't just say, there's a reason, like, otherwise he would just say no right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. It's sure his opinion might have, impact on how the constituents think or how people involved might think, but he doesn't actually get to go in there and be like, you're not allowed.
Yeah, well, also he can pull, he can basically make it so, I don't know, literally the because you're going to have to apply for a million different zoning licenses and, you know, to build that infrastructure.
It within Scottsdale.
Because the sewage and the water piping is going to extend into Scottsdale.
So that's they'd have to apply for.
And there's and you need to do it. Otherwise you're going to have to go the complete opposite direction, which is even longer. Like, this is not thought out. Again, it's not thought out.
Did you see what the Utah guy did today?
Yeah, he came out with the Utah guy, Brian Smith, which that's the most Mormon name on the planet, just whitest, whatever. But he came out and he was just like, hey, you know, if there's an NHL team that came to Utah, what would you name it? And I saw
what happened.
Yeah, which is, you know, but it's, why would you ever put in this day and
vision puts Teamy McTeam
face? Yeah, I was
going to
Teamy McTeam face. I put the Utah, please come back, Sharon's, you know, because of my wife, you know, like there's a bunch of people why would you ever, I want to see if you, we can,
yeah, like just not,
I want to see if you can find the results because maybe next episode, if we can do that, we'll read the funniest team names that were submitted. This, I'm going to make a prediction. Look, again, when we say with all this, we feel really bad. At least I personally, and I know you do as well, Rachel, feel really bad for Arizona hockey fans because they just want to enjoy their team like 31 other fan bases get to do without the constant existential threat of it being ripped away from them. However, if you notice a trend recently in sports of teams getting ripped away from their cities, a lot of it comes down to incompetence. A big example of that being the Oakland Athletics and what they're doing. They want to move to Las Vegas. It hasn't even been approved yet, but they've already announced they're leaving Oakland and they're going to be spending the next two or three or maybe even four seasons in a minor league awful ballpark in Sacramento because their owner, John Fisher, is an absolute idiot. And there's a great
they're the Coyotes of
exactly. Like, and now you look at this. If this the reason this is happening, look, it's always going to be an uphill battle in Arizona just because of how the Coyotes landed with a thud when they started out. They just didn't have great ownership from the get go. They have good teams from the get go, etc. But this ownership group with Alex Morello, they're completely incompetent. They are they are the last people that should be doing this, and they're gonna fail. They're gonna get outbid. The starting thing for this is $68.5 million. That is how much they spend every year on players, basically. Even though the salary cap is 83.5 right now. That's a starting bid. They're going to get outbid. And they're going to like, and we're going to be cheering for the Utah bunch of wives, you know, like it's what's going to happen.
That's honestly, that's absolutely fantastic. I mean, okay. One, I don't think you're putting out that survey if you're Ryan Smith, if you don't legitimately think you're getting a team. Number two, I mean, I'm right there with you with fans. Like, I've got a friend who lives in Arizona. He's a huge Coyotes fan, and he just wants to stop having his team be the absolute clown car of the league. And there are super passionate fans. And frankly, with all of the crap that they've been through, they deserve an owner that actually cares about them and cares about the team. And
doesn't that's just his say priority, he cares
not,
about
them. Not owning a team so he can own a casino as well, because that's truly where he wants to be. Like, I think there needs to be some level of stipulation here. But I'm also going to go ahead and say, knowing what I know about how the inner workings of the league do things, he's not putting out that survey without the blessing of the league. And the league is not putting that blessing out there unless they're trying to send a message. And so, I mean, I don't really want to talk about a land auction anymore.
No. I'm just saying, like, this is...
I'm done. Like, I can't stand the Morelos at all. I think they're terrible for the game. That they're running a franchise into the ground that has actually done a lot of great work at the grassroots level, despite
the
ownership has done. And fans have shown up to the rink despite ownership. And we're getting to the point where, like, players in the league are really frustrated about the situation in Arizona, as they should be. That's not an NHL rink. And so I think we're kind of at the point where I'm like, enough. Like, I'm done. It's impacting the salary cap because of revenues. They shouldn't be entitled to revenue sharing while you're playing in a rink that is basically fits like an OHL team. Mm-hmm. And so as far as I'm concerned, shit or get off the pot. And yeah, I think we should just leave it at that.
Yeah. One last thing real quick is Shaw. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but Frank Saravalli had a great point on one of his shows, which was basically he was saying, if you take a look at the Coyotes for next season, they don't have a single defenseman under contract for next season. They don't. They've like
correct.
Not a single one. Their blue line next year has nobody on it. Like literally,
they have no defense.
They have no defense. So you know how to say, oh, that team's got no defense. No, they literally have no defense. They signed a guy to an ELC, and that's about it. Like, when it comes to adding players beyond this season, there is no money in this team. And even if there was, why on earth would any player who is not desperate to stay in the league, who is on the like the borderline of being out of the league and is desperate to stay in the league, sign with this organization knowing that he could be moving to Utah in the middle of next season, or that the team could just fold? You know, like,
well, no, it's not going to fold. It's not going to fold because that's not how the franchise stuff works at the NHL level. Like, it's not, they're not folding the team, but I mean,
why would you sign with this team?
Good point is, yeah, you're only signing there if it's like your last chance and you know, you're not going to get waived or whatever. So you're going to sign there.
Like, in a normal situation, Sean Durzi gets a 3-year extension in the middle of the season. Yusuf Alamaki gets a 3-year extension in the middle of the season. You know, they potentially, like, Jason Zucker's a great veteran fit on there. Oh, he maybe gets like a 2-year extension just to sort of, you know, like, get bring some continuity, you know, stuff like what like the Flyers were doing a little bit before, or what even the Blackhawks are doing now, why they re-sign guys like Jason Dickinson and you know, Andreas Anastasiou and stuff, for like, because they're bad right now, but they're building a foundation. There's nobody. And so there's clearly no money, and there's clearly no faith from any players that this is a situation that they want to wade into or they want to subject themselves to anymore. So, like you said, we're done talking about land auctions. The reason I brought this up is because the mayor of Scottsdale, which is the mayor of the big city that this land is straddling and will likely have say over whether or not they're able to build sewage lines and water lines into that property, and he will likely strike that down. He calls it a fantasy hockey proposal. That's what he said. He calls it that. This is at every single time this moves forward, every single time this comes into the news, it is a pockmark on hockey. It is embarrassing. You do not see this in the NFL or the NBA, and we're seeing it in the MLB, and it is getting freaking destroyed public relations wise. So
the Athletics have been the laughing stock of the MLB for 3 years.
And they're even like, and now with their whole Sacramento thing, like that is what they're doing is basically it's basically the equivalent of playing in a 4,500 seat, whatever it is, college arena. And I know a bunch of people are trying to say, oh, it's kind of cool. You get to be clear near the ring.
No!
It's embarrassing. Shut up. So yeah, I'm sick of talking about this. We brought it up because the Scottsdale mayor came out and basically publicly denounced it as forcefully as they could have. And if you recall, the Glendale city manager also forcefully denounced this team and said, we have a great future for Gila River Arena with the Coyotes not part of it. Every place this team touches, it ends up, the people in charge, the powers that be, end up going, we don't want you near us. So at a certain point, maybe you're the problem. Anyway,
you're being ownership, not
yes,
everything else.
No, I'm talking about you directly, owner. Rachel. You directly.
No, but I'm saying like fan wise, like it's not their fault.
No, it's not the fan. No, the fans.
And no. and that's the thing. I don't want. Listen, I don't want to. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, so we're gonna move on.
I can't stand it. I'm done with it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like they could offer me a job, and I wouldn't take it. Like
the Coyotes could offer me the GM job.
Mike is aware of the job I turned down about a month and a half ago, and it is for the total opposite of the Arizona Coyotes in terms of money, how a franchise is run, and respect on general terms in the public sphere. Like, people don't want to work for the organization. People don't want to cover this crap. People don't want to play there. Fans, they just want their team. Nobody wants to deal with ownership. They're the laughingstock of professional sports in North America. And it's to the point where people in Europe are noticing and they're like, what is this? It's a joke.
I know people who have worked for the Coyotes. I know people who have been in the front office, like on a personal level, like they want to get out of there as quickly as they can. Anyway, the Ottawa Senators are hypocrites. Here we are.
Water is wet.
Yeah, we started off with a land auction, and now we're talking about empty nets again, because on the weekend, on Saturday night, the New Jersey Devils, or on Saturday night, the Ottawa Senators lost. Big shocker. The New Jersey Devils beat them. And as the buzzer wound down, Nico Hischier is on a breakaway for an empty net, and he just kind of tucks it in. Just very, like, you know, the buzzer.
Yeah, he just like lets it go off of his stick into the net. Like he doesn't shoot.
Yeah, he just kind of keeps the momentum going. Brady Tkachuk goes, oh no, can't happen. Oh no. And so it turns out that
he's a giant piss baby.
He's a giant piss baby. he's also a giant piss baby who hasn't accomplished literally anything at the NHL level of note. He's a captain whose team has being the biggest underperformer in the league 2 years running. So it's interesting how the media hasn't really caught up to that yet. Also, he's under a point per game and he's making a lot of money. So that's also interesting. What I saw a lot was the headline that back when Ridly Greig did his whole empty net thing, that Brady Tkachuk said, oh yeah, I was crying laughing when it happened. Didn't seem like he was crying laughing this time when someone did it against him. And then so all the Senators fans, they come out and they go, oh, but it's different. Oh, but this is after the whistle. Oh, it's up.
I have one thing to say about this and one thing only, because I don't think this merits an entire discussion. I was texting with a few people with the New Jersey Devils after that happened. And my favorite response that I got about, like, isn't it funny, the whole Ridly Greig thing, and now Tkachuk like tried to take out Nico? My favorite response back was, yeah, he's a bitch. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I was like, all right, no notes. I don't have anything to add.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know what I think, though, Rachel? I think that that was the night that that Canucks fans earned their Masterton. They're not Canucks fans. Sens fans earned their Masterton trophy.
I was going to say Canucks fans can actually go pound salt.
Yeah, no, but I think that was the game. That was the night when Ottawa Senators fans, they earned their most aggrieved franchise award, because they, you know what? And for Sens fans, I salute you. Thank you for your service. You are brave and you are heroes and you fight for our freedom. Thank you. All right. Another one, and this is a little fun question I have for you, Rachel, before we get into our deep dive. So we had an eclipse today. Now that I work in an office, it's very funny how people will look for any excuse to leave the office at 3:10 p.m. Basically, it was very, very funny.
Patio season, Mike. You're on King West.
I know. Even though the clouds came and, you know, we couldn't actually, like, I got to see a little bit of the eclipse beforehand because, you know, like, I'm pretty high up in an office building. And so a lot of people had these eclipse glasses and I was able to look through it where, like, the sun, I guess it was the moon passing over through the sun. So the moon was, like, just in the corner of the sun. It looked really cool. But it was wild because you're outside and it got, like, pitch black just out of nowhere. And the temperature dropped like 10 degrees in like a minute. Like, it was weird.
It was a little odd.
But my question, Rachel, is which NHL and the big thing everyone was saying is don't look right at it. You know, a lot of, like, it's
still
tempting,
remember when Donald Trump literally looked right at it?
So I saw a great clip because there was an eclipse in 2017, like a partial eclipse, I believe.
Yeah, that's
wasn't a
the
full
one
like this
that Hillary Clinton often refers to as, like, don't take medical advice from a guy who looked directly into an eclipse.
But there was one in 2017, the one that Trump looked right at, but it was, but all that. And there's a video of Odell Beckham
Genuinely
Jr.
Hilarious.
There's a video of Odell Beckham Jr., you know, former wide receiver star. Looking like he took a video of himself looking right at it from his hotel. He was on the road somewhere, I guess, looking at it. Before he looked into that eclipse, he was averaging over 1,300 yards a season with 12 touchdowns a season. After that, he averaged, I believe it is 654 yards and 4 touchdowns per season. Like legit, we might have, like the eclipse might have fried Odell Beckham Jr.'s retina. Like, it's crazy. But I like to think of that. I say that to ask you, Rachel, which NHL player do you think would look straight into the belly of the eclipse?
Okay, so there's, like, a couple that come to mind immediately. Brandon Tanev, because of his photo. Tyler Bertuzzi, because it just, put it this
way,
like,
to give Brandon
Tanev Bertuzzi through COVID.
Yeah.
Like, you know exactly what I'm getting at here. Tony D'Angelo 100% is going to look into a solar eclipse. Like,
well, you know why?
Almost no doubt about it.
Because, well, he's not going to listen to the liberal media. He's going to look right into the eclipse. The liberal media is telling you not to look right into this eclipse. And so are we going to let
the
libtards?
The other non-player who, you know what, based on their job performance, may have already looked into eclipse is the Department of Player Safety.
Yeah, George Peros would look into it.
Like, you're telling me that these dudes, they're looking directly into the eclipse. Come on.
No, George Peros would try and fight the sun.
So, yeah, I would say, no, that's Matt Rempe, buddy. That's Matt Rempe.
No, I feel bad for that guy.
Feel like
he has two built-in eclipse goggles because of his black eyes.
I would say Tony D'Angelo, Tyler Bertuzzi, and then for the funny one, Brandon Tanev. I don't think Brandon Tanev's actually
Brandon
dumb
Lemieux?
Enough to do that. Well, him and Tony D'Angelo are the
Brandon Lemieux.
They're the same guy.
Yeah,
they're the same guy. But honestly, you know what I'm getting at? Like, somebody along those lines.
You know what? I have a fun one. Not a fun one, but I have one that I think
Okay.
And this is just because there are no thoughts going on in this guy's head ever. It's William Nylander. He would look right at it.
He apparently, according to Alter, he didn't even know there was an eclipse today.
Exactly. He'd look up and he'd go, "Oh, what's going on with that?" And he'd stare at it. And then he'd go, "Oh, that's crazy." Anyway, and then he realized he can't see anymore.
You know what's cool, though? I can't wait to ask my dad about it because my dad's in Africa right now. So he got to see the solar eclipse in Africa, like he was on a plane. So I'm curious to see like what it looked like when you're actually, you know, in the sky.
I wonder what it's like for pilots, because like they gotta look ahead.
You adjust your route. I asked. So my
really? Like you, my, you doing it,
do you, want me,
that's
do you want me to tell you? I can actually I asked this question today. So my friend flies an F-16. He's a fighter pilot in the Air Force. And so he knows all about this shit because that's his job. And I asked him, I'm like, so you're a pilot. And if put it this way, if someone threatens to like drop a bomb or like shoot something, they're going up, solar eclipse or not. Like those F-16s are going up there. And so I asked him, I'm like, what do you do? And he goes, oh, there's different routes that you have to take to ensure that you're not like flying directly towards the sun. So you have to take like a different path to your target. And there's also fighter pilots. He said he didn't know about pilots, but fighter pilots actually have those like helmets that are obviously a lot different than, you know, being a pilot. And he said they actually have the built-in protection where if they had to like look at the eclipse, they could.
Okay. So that's a great
pilots, it's probably just, he said it's probably just a sunglasses thing.
Yeah, well, you have to have like four pairs of sunglasses on at the same time or something.
They're specialized. They're specialized flight glasses.
If you look through eclipse glasses, it's pitch black. Like you can't see anything except for the sun. It's pretty crazy. All right, Rachel. Our deep dive, basically, it's Eastern Conference playoff race, man. It is nuts. The Penguins, the Islanders, the Sabres, the Red Wings, and the Flyers are all duking it out. And yet it seems like three of those five don't want to make it. that's not even to include the fact that the Devils and the Sabres were also pretty tight in there up until recently.
Well, the Sabres are included in that five, but like even generally speaking, up until probably like a week and a half ago,
well, they are.
The Isles, the Sabres, the Red Wings, and the Flyers, nobody wanted to win a game. So they couldn't, like, there was not really even a race. It's like, who's going to backdoor their way in? And then the Penguins came along and said, actually, mm-hmm. I say the Penguins, Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, I was going to say, no.
And said, Sidney actually, Crosby. I'm going to win some games. And now the Isles and Penguins have been winning games. The Penguins specifically are red hot. And it is extraordinarily funny that the Pens might play the Canes in round one after trading Jake Guentzel to the Canes.
Yeah, that is legitimately so remarkable. However,
it's honestly, it's so funny. But that, like, when we think about a playoff race, generally it's like, oh, they won or they won or they won or they won. And, these two teams, like the Isles, have to play the Red Wings, and the Penguins have to play the Red Wings and the Isles. I think something like that. I was looking at their remaining schedule. Someone's got to win those games.
Okay, the Pens have the toughest remaining schedule here because every team they play from here on out is either a playoff team, like a team that is in or has locked up their spot, or it's one of the teams they're fighting for against.
Or is it?
Like,
no, they have one game against Montreal, I thought. I'm pretty sure they have one game against Montreal.
I will check that while you talk.
But like, regardless, the Pens, of the five teams, the Pens are playing the best hockey right now. So I mean, it doesn't really matter at this point. Like, they're playing Toronto. By the time you guys hear this podcast, they will have played the Leafs. Not going to be remotely surprised if they beat the Leafs. The Leafs are not playing particularly well right now. And obviously injuries and things like that. But it just seems like the Pens are getting great goaltending from Nedeljkovic, which is obviously key to their turnaround. And Sidney Crosby has like 20 points in his last, like, I don't know, I think it's like 9 or 10 games, like just absolutely insane. I've been hitting his over 1.5 point total with relative ease over the last few weeks. And I mean, I'm not surprised that they've rocketed up the standings. I love it because I think you and I can both agree the NHL is better off when guys like McDavid and Crosby are in the playoffs. Like if we can have a playoff season that has Kucherov, MacKinnon, Matthews, McDavid, and Crosby in it, I'm pretty happy because then the only person we're really missing is Ovechkin. Like that's
he's in the fight. He's still in the fight.
Right.
And he might get in.
So it's one of those things
crazy. Well, what's also great too is we'll be getting playoff Erik Karlsson again if they make it.
Which I think is really yes.
So
Malkin. Oh my god, playoff Malkin.
Playoff Malkin, playoff Karlsson, like one
playoff
player I want to bring
is
playoff Crosby, obviously. But the thing that I really want to sort of talk about here is Alex Nedeljkovic. Like he is like Sidney Crosby's obviously turned it on like crazy. And you know, like is willing them into the playoffs. Like there are obviously other like Michael Bunting's been on a run as well. That's great to see him land there.
But Michael Bunting's not on this run if Sid's not.
Exactly. But Alex Nedeljkovic, like this is a guy who was written off completely. Like signed a 1-year, $1.5 million deal with the Pens to basically like potentially be the backup. You know, Tristan Jarry was extended like or was like for 5 years, given a ton of money as like the go-to guy. And keep in mind, like this is a guy in Nedeljkovic. He was sent down to the AHL towards the end of his Detroit tenure. Like he was unplayable. It was getting really, really bad.
Beat Detroit out for the playoffs.
Exactly. So he's won 5 straight games. His like he's posted a save percentage above 930 in 2 of them, above 960 in 1 of them, above 919 in 3 of them. You know, like he's standing on his head, and I'm only seeing the last 5 games. It's extended more. He has taken over the starter's job, and he has played phenomenally for them. Sidney Crosby is obviously the straw that stirs the drink here. Like they're not here without him, but they're also not here without Nedeljkovic stopping these pucks either. And so that's a big thing. I want to talk about though who you think is going to make it here. Like who you think, like because this is a very tight race, and we haven't talked about the fact that Philly, once shockingly to their point, I guess to their sort of aplomb, they were shockingly at one point looked like a lock. They were playing incredible. They have completely cratered, and they are now outside looking in. And could potentially get lapped, like we said, by these teams. Philly is in disarray. Is this just sort of them, you know, is this sort of like Cinderella turning into a pumpkin at the worst possible time?
Yeah. The clock seems to have struck midnight.
They ran out?
Yeah. The reality is, the Flyers were expected to be in the Celebrini sweepstakes. So the fact that we're having a discussion about them being in a playoff race on April the 8th is an accomplishment in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And I think that cannot be overlooked, is that we were talking about a team that was supposed to be with Chicago and San Jose and
in the
Anaheim.
Celebrini Bowl.
Yeah. And now they're ahead of Montreal, ahead of Ottawa, ahead of Columbus, like ahead of Buffalo. There are so many things to be excited about in Philadelphia. So I don't think that Philadelphia falling out, one, should surprise anybody, but two, be deemed a failure at all. Because when you look at it, they have a rookie goalie in Samuel Ersson, who is really only supposed to play 20 to 30 games this year. And obviously,
why is he being thrust into the starter's role, Rachel? Did something happen to their presumed starter?
Yeah.
Is it an injury?
John Tortorella came out today, actually, and said that they had conversations about Carter Hart in the offseason, which is not the best look when the NHL said nobody knew anything about it and we didn't know anything about it. It's like, okay, we all knew that you knew about it, but didn't want to admit it. And now John Tortorella has just said it right from the horse's mouth. And honestly, kudos to him for just being upfront about it. I have a lot of respect for that, because you know that the lawyers and the PR staff were trying to ninja chop that microphone out of the way. But anyways, a rookie goalie He was really only supposed to play 20 or 30 games, obviously thrust into a bigger role. And a rookie goalie coming in and taking over the starter's job in their first year almost never happens. It is so exceedingly rare that a rookie goalie comes in and has immediate success. The last one I can really remember who came in immediately, was a starter, and had any level of success was Steve Mason in 2008. I was 12.
Andrew Hammond?
He wasn't a rookie. That guy was like 30.
No, he was, but he was.
He wasn't eligible for the Calder. He was not eligible for the Calder. So you do not count. Samuel Ersson is eligible for the Calder. So I'm talking about like a young goalie, and Ersson is young. Like he's 22, 23 years old, right? You're putting your goalie in a terrible position, but they don't have another option. And so I think Ersson deserves some credit for where he got the team to, but I'm also not remotely surprised that he's breaking down, because that's exactly what you'd expect out of a young player at this age. We talk about young players hitting walls all the time, and it's no different. It's just when it's a goaltender, you notice it a lot more.
I'm sorry. I just looked at Andrew Hammond's, like he was 26 when he stepped in. So
he wasn't eligible.
He wasn't 30, but he wasn't color eligible. That he played 24 games like that year in that run. He went 21-2 with a .941, and he stopped 18.3 goals above average. And so keep in mind, he played 24 games that year, right? Like 24. That's like a quarter of the schedule.
What an NHL backup averages over the course of a season.
Yeah, he finished top 10 in Vezina voting.
That's insane. That says a lot about the GMs.
And he finished 15th in heart voting.
That's like 24 games.
He played 24 games. But you have to say, like, the Sens made it to the playoffs. He was the most valuable guy potentially to, like, no other team went on a run like they did when the guy came in.
Then you got to give the heart to Crosby if the Pens get in, and he doesn't deserve it this year. Like, I know,
yeah, you're right.
Talking Austin about value Matthews to teams. Right. And like, I'm sorry, but neither does Nikita Kucherov. Like, this thing is just like ridiculous to me.
I don't like how the media, and I say the media as if we're not in it, but like the liberal media, as I like to say, have ruined the Hart Trophy for me. They've ruined it.
Well, the Hart Trophy itself is a stupid process anyways, because you just need to have most outstanding player and call it a day. Just call it fucking player in the league and be done.
That would be McDavid every time.
McDavid every goddamn time. They do it
so there can be a new guy every year, basically. So it doesn't become monotonous. But then it creates insane. Yeah. Anyway.
It's so dumb and I hate it. And yeah, it drives me crazy. I hate it.
That's the Metro.
I think the Isles and the Pens get in.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, end of the line here, who do you think pulls it out?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the Isles and the Pens. Mm-hmm. I could see a scenario where the Caps get in.
You could.
But
the minus 30 goal differential Caps?
Yep. I could see a scenario where that, but it's not the most likely one. But I can see a scenario. Simulations that I've run and strength of schedule remaining, the current strength of the team weighted against the current strength of their opponents, run of play, trends, things like that. It's the Pens and the Isles.
Yeah. I could see a scenario where I show up to one of the press junkets for Dune 2 and I go up to Florence Pugh and I go, I love you. You're the love of my life. Run away with me. And she says yes. I can see a scenario where that happens. Doesn't seem likely. And I think that the Caps, I don't know, man. Like they don't have the juice, in my opinion. They don't have the sauce, if you will. And I know that's not
a slim one, but I don't want to just say Pens and Isles, but like you gotta leave the possibility of like a 13.
I think the Red Wings might pull it out here. I think the Wings, like, I know that the, like, it's the
they're going to get murdered in the first round.
Oh, yeah. I think, I honestly think any team that makes it here is going to get freaking dummy.
If Pittsburgh gets in and they're playing well, they could be a problem. Yes, absolutely. if Nedeljkovic continues to play well,
that is huge.
If Nedeljkovic continues to play well and you get playoff gear, Crosby, Malkin, Carlson, and Letang, that's a problem.
And Gens, oh.
Kyle Dubas made, and now it kind of looks even better because maybe the Penguins aren't as bad as we thought, and they were able to recoup a ton of assets.
We did, Rachel, we did an entire episode like 2-3 months ago about how the Pens are better than their record states.
Yep. And you know? Now, like, he's gone and got assets, and people were clowning on him, and now it looks pretty fucking good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's funny. That team is, like you said, we did the episode on they were better than we thought. Now they've recouped a ton of assets, and there is absolutely nothing preventing them from offering Jake Gensel a contract on July 1st.
No, absolutely. I mean, the only thing preventing them is the salary cap.
Quite frankly,
like I said, the only thing preventing them is the salary cap. But it's I think the fourth that they got for Chad Ruhwedel, it's really going to come in handy. You know, like it's I think it's wild though that because I've I'm in some group chats with some with some Leafs fans and with just hockey fans in general, and when the Pens were in their
not a group chat girl
but when they were when the Pens were like they had the opportunity to sort of it looked like that they were kind of sunk, they were 10 points back maybe a month ago, like it was crazy, and around that there were a lot of talk was guys going like guys in my group chats, which are filled with media personnel as well, kind of going, man, maybe Dubas sucked like in Toronto, like maybe because that failure then had a lot of people thinking, man, Alex Barabanov for basically nothing, letting Stefan Niesen go, letting Jared McCann go to protect Kerfoot and Hall.
That is the only decision where I really have an issue with. The other ones I don't think are remotely worth writing home about.
You know, but like there's just like it's sort of death by a thousand cuts on this because there was a lot of talent that walked out the door that ended up being, you know, useful. But now it's funny.
Hang on, time out.
Okay.
You could say that about Barabanov, but he's playing on the Sharks.
I didn't want to make this a big thing. The one thing I was going to say was it will likely come down to one single point, whether or not Kyle Dubas is actually a genius in disguise or has sucked this whole time. It will come down to one point this year where the narrative will go, because that's a crossroads. If the Pens make the playoffs, even if they get bounced in the first round, they make the playoffs, they'll go, the Pens were able to make the playoffs, recoup some, like at least inside PSG or Fenway. So FSG, sorry. Fenway Sports Group, like they'll say, hey, we got some playoff gate revenue, that's awesome, and we're able to recoup assets and, you know, get in the playoffs, that's great, Kyle Dubas, he's a secret genius. They miss and they go, oh man, Kyle Dubas bet on an old core, you know, his fatal flaw of assembling a core four failed once again.
FSG doesn't think that way.
I'm not saying FSG is going to call him a failure. I'm saying fans are going to call him a failure.
Well, that analysis is lazy.
I know it is, but I'm saying it will come down to one point, whether or not where the narrative goes.
Writes an article, because somebody will. Yeah. Whoever writes the article that Kyle Dubas is a failure because they missed by one point doesn't deserve a job in hockey media. Full stop, end. Because if you can recoup assets when you don't believe that your team is good, that is what you should be doing. There are how many times have we sat here and said they need to sell at the deadline and they don't sell, and we're like, you guys are fucking idiots. Well, now, Rachel, Kyle Dubas made the decision and it was the right one for where Pittsburgh was. Now they've played their way in. That doesn't make the decision he made the wrong decision.
I'm just saying now are you saying
I have zero time for that?
You're sitting here saying that Steve Simmons doesn't deserve a job in hockey media. And
yes, correct.
And I can't say that I disagree with you. All right, Rachel. Well, we are at the end of the podcast here. This is our last remote show for a little while, obviously, because you are finally coming back to the city, which is nice. So no more technical difficulties, which will be great, even though we haven't really had any, but still. Yeah, if you would like to leave a review on any podcatcher, I would encourage you to do so. We subscribe on YouTube, on Twitch, on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitter, you know, wherever you find your social medias, we are there. Not Facebook, though, because we're not 68 years old. But on top of that, too, if you can donate to Jumpstart, our charity of choice. Jumpstart helps economically disadvantaged kids play team sports, which is a cause that's very near and dear to Rachel and I's hearts. You know, it's I think it's very important. So go to the links in our description, that, you know, in the description for the episode. They're all there. If you can, please donate to Jumpstart. And Rachel, I will see you in person on Friday. Woo!
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.